Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us here on this Friday. As always, brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Boy, it's a time to stock up, isn't it? And you do need to stock up. Get yourself ready for the big weekend. I mean, people are going to be stopping by. I mean, you know, you have to make sure you're ready. And not only that, you may be invited someplace. I mean, Kevin, I mean, your dance card must be completely loaded.
Oh, you have no idea. I got a busy week.
Well, I wouldn't go on here and brag about it. I mean, really. I mean, that's, all right. I mean, that's the approach you want to take. But you want to get beer and soda, fresh, hot, roasted peanuts, pickle bar, snacks. Wow. I mean, they have everything at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, and Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And I'm here at the Chateau, as nicknamed by Jack Ham. Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Last night, the Penn State women's volleyball team put on a show for the ages last night. They wiped out Washington in Seattle, and I mean wiped them out. And they will play Wisconsin for the national championship tomorrow night. Brian Tripp joins us from Seattle. He called the match last night with Dean DeVore. Brian, that was one of those signature moments that tells you how good they can be.
Yeah, it brought back memories of the days of Megan Hodge and Krista Harmato, Alicia Glass. That was the best performance I've seen from this group and the best volleyball performance in a national semifinal I've seen in quite some time. Almost hit 500 for the entire match. It was incredible.
Brian, they carved that team up. I mean, and Washington got off to a decent start and looked like they had a little bit of control in the first set, and then when Micah Hancock started serving, everything died.
Yeah, she was the difference. She was able to get them on a couple of runs where they were able to get seven in a row. And I thought she was, herself, Deja McClendon, were probably the best two players on the floor last night, but it's really hard to pick because it was a real team effort by Penn State. One of the things I talked about in the broadcast, Steve, is when you're going on the road in a tough environment, Washington is obviously going to come out of the gate and score some points. It's just how do you handle those first maybe 10 at most, and that's about what it ended up being. Handle that, weather the storm, and fight right back. And the great thing Hancock can do is really kill a rally and start one of her own. And anytime Penn State gets on a run and starts to get the momentum, they are tough to beat. And boy, were they tough to beat last night.
Let's talk about Deja McClendon for a moment, because it wasn't just how fabulous she was on the attack. What really, really struck me was how fabulous she was in the back row and her passing off the back row and how many saves she had off the back row last night.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. She had another double, 11 kills, 13 digs in the match. And her passing on the serves was good, but her passing on the attacks was even better. And a lot of times when you have Krista Van Zandt, who we talked a lot about yesterday, and the level of attackers that you have on the outside for a team that was the Pac-12 champion, only lost two matches all year, you just want to keep the ball off the floor. Well, she kept the ball off the floor and was able to get it right where Micah Hancock, it almost looked like a practice drill, where she was passing it right to where Hancock could use all her weapons. One of the keys in the match was to use good passing. That way Hancock could set the middles. Well, Katie Slay had 8 kills. Mia Grant had 6. And a lot of that has to do with the way Deja McClendon played in the back row. And start her career with a tournament MVP and end it would be pretty nice, and I think she's well on her way to that after last night.
Well, I want to talk about that for a moment because it brings up a topic I brought up in my classroom, and Deja McClendon took my class in the fall, and she'll get her degree, by the way, tomorrow. She's one of four women's volleyball players that will get their degrees as they are in Seattle, and she's one of the four. Mm-hmm. And I brought this up. We were talking about, I said, you know, when you're in talk radio, for example, and it's a 24-hour cycle. I mean, you know, we air talk 24/7 around here, whether it's games or talk radio. And you'll do a show for 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours. You need to come up with topics. And one of the topics that's been brought up over the years that I've always found to be an absurd topic, but what the heck, you're doing topics, is, take, for example, Peyton Manning needs to win a second Super Bowl to cement his legacy. Mario Andretti only won one Indianapolis 500. You and I have gone through that scenario before. So she was in class, and so I brought this up because we were doing a segment on talk radio. And I said, Deja, tell everybody how hard it is to win. And she just rolled her eyes. She says, it's unbelievable. He said, to win takes so much. They won her freshman year. They haven't won the national championship since. So she was a perfect person to tell everybody else it's hard to win. And to see them do this, to get to the championship again, Brian, it has taken a lot to do it and should not be taken for granted.
Not at all. And when you talk about how hard it is to win, you have to consider luck as a factor. You have to consider skill as a factor. Do the players stay healthy? What's the landscape like around the rest of the conference? Is Stanford loaded in the Pac-12? Are you going to be able to get past that?
So what's your draw?
Take into it.
Right, what's your draw?
Yeah. I mean, Wisconsin hadn't played a team that was seeded until last night.
And took them out in four.
And ended up beating Texas.
And took them out in four. I'll be honest, I completely, totally downplayed it on the air saying, okay, fine, just get that out of the way. Texas is in and move on. I gave Wisconsin zero chance, so I was totally wrong. How different is this Wisconsin team compared to the one that Penn State beat twice in the regular season, especially at the freshman setter spot?
Yeah, she's really grown. I think she, from the get-go, has been really good, Lauren Carlini. And she might be one of the top five setters in the country. Probably not might be. She is one of the top five setters in the country. Just really smart, aware, poised. She gives her hitters chances. And the advantage Wisconsin had last night was its play in the back row. Texas was bad. Texas looked disinterested. They looked like they figured they were going to walk through it. And I think Wisconsin had a great edge on the bench. Kelly Sheffield, their first-year head coach, out-coached Jarrett Elliott, who led Texas to a national championship last year. And Wisconsin, Steve, really quick on them, 5'7 attacker Demi Morales, how does a 5'7 attacker hit against two of the best athletes in the country, Bailey Webster, Haley Eckerman? And they just found ways. It got ugly, and ugly volleyball is kind of the way that Wisconsin needs it. If Wisconsin wants to have a chance against the big powers, I think this is a team that's more confident than when they played Penn State last, and Penn State sweeping Wisconsin both times. Although the scores in each of those sets, it wasn't a blowout by any means, but it's a more confident group that right now feels like they can win. However, there's no doubt Penn State's going to be the heavy, heavy favorite tomorrow night.
Well, it's a more confident group. But, Brian, I mean, they didn't have to blow Texas out to win. I think just winning, I think, probably sent shockwaves through the arena. And that's why I think Penn State's performance was even more impressive last night, because I'm sure Washington must have felt, here is our chance to win the whole thing at home. And Penn State crushed them.
I agree. And I think part of it, too, Steve, is Penn State swept Wisconsin twice this year. So going into the match, you see what's in front of you, that the national championship is there for the taking. So I think Penn State had some pressure, too, last night.
Yeah.
And they just came right out and steamrolled Washington at home. They downplayed whatever happened in the match before them, and just went out there and played their best volleyball of the year. And now it's going to be, how do you take that momentum, ride it into Saturday, recognize that Wisconsin, even though you've beaten them twice, they just beat Texas. This is a team that's better, and I'm sure Russ Rose is going to be preaching how much better they are and how they just beat a team like Texas. Anything can happen. But it's really surprising in volleyball to see a team pull off that big of an upset. You just don't see upset that big. And we talked about the parity yesterday a little bit. It's really good for the Big Ten, that's for sure.
It's great for the Big Ten. At the same time, Brian, when we talk about the emotion of all this, tomorrow is it. It is the national championship. It should not matter who's across the net.
No, it really shouldn't. And having a senior class like Penn State, you'd figure it won't be a problem with Ariel Scott, Katie Slays, Deja McClendon's of the world. And then I think they have great leadership from their junior class as well, with Dom Gonzalez and Mikey Hancock. Wisconsin has nothing to lose, though. It's going to be, a pretty loose group. Over watching Penn State last night, I'm sure they were sitting there. They left after the second set and sitting there like deer in headlights. I didn't really get that close of a look at them, but when you watch the performance Penn State had, talking with Beth Mullins and Karsh Karai afterwards a little bit, they said it was the best performance they've seen in a national semifinal maybe ever. That it looked like the Megan High. It just looked like those dominant Penn State teams. And although it's tough to win, and although this group has won once, when you had freshmen like Katie Slay, Ariel Scott, Deja McClendon making such significant contributions during their first season, having Micah Hancock, a freshman setter, 2 years ago, and now as a junior, you figured this group maybe by this season would really steamroll. Well, they've found a way to win a lot of matches. They haven't always been dominant winning. All of a sudden, last night, it really came together, and I think a lot of people were waiting for that the last couple of weeks, months, and maybe even years.
Whenever a team makes a run in a sport, there's usually a senior you can look at and say, you know what? They can see the finish line, and their game has been elevated a bit. And I don't care if it's football. You can see it in basketball. You know, there's several sports that you can see it in when a team makes a run. What about the performance of Katie Slay?
She is fantastic. Great personality, big spots. She steps up. She's not intimidated, and she recognizes her skill set. She knows she needs to get an advantage. She's smart. She prepares better than anyone else. That's what I think it is, and I think she does see the finish line. I think they all see the finish line, and that's why they're tougher than everyone else. They're mentally tough, and that comes back to Russ Rose. But he kills again for her. She's just consistent. Maybe as an attacker, it's hard to stay as consistent on the outside. But talk about a middle blocker, a force, someone that's always going to be able to slow down the opponent, top hitter. Katie Slay does it time in and time out. And as long as they get some consistency around her, it seems like they have a chance, because Katie Slay is the great neutralizer of the opponent. And tell you what, she is fantastic to be here. This is a fun, fun team to cover. They are really great to be around. They really are.
Obviously, tomorrow night is sold out, but is there a concern of what attendance could be like tomorrow night because Washington's not in it?
Yeah, I don't think it will be the environment they had last night there, although that environment got awfully quiet after the first set. Penn State won that by, I think, 11. But it should still be a good crowd. Obviously, the coaches' clinic's in town and the convention, so that should help. It'll be a good crowd. I think the Washington faithful won't be out as much as last night. But the coolest thing last night was actually when Wisconsin was beating Texas, and everyone except the people in the orange were in there backing Wisconsin. It was like an NCAA tournament basketball game.
Yep.
Florida Gulf Coast trying to pull off a big upset. Everyone in the building except the fans of that one team really rooting for the underdog. So I thought that was really cool. It was a really great environment.
Yeah.
And everyone's on top of the court, which is cool. It's a great venue for whether it be basketball, volleyball, something like that.
You know, it's interesting because I was at the Florida Gulf Coast Georgetown game. I covered it. And you're absolutely right. Suddenly they felt like they were back home in Florida. They never had a crowd that big at home.
No.
Before.
It's like when everyone roots against Duke, so.
Duke.
The Dukies. Jabari with a nice game last night.
Yeah, Jabari played well last night against UCLA. I listened to a little bit of that game before the Penn State matchup last night. And UCLA, oddly enough, started the game with 16 fouls. Well,
I'm glad they play at Madison Square Garden. I think that's cool. Duke always gets to go there, and they draw well.
Well,
Madison Square Garden really embraces college basketball because I think it's a mecca for basketball.
First time since '68, the NCAA tournament's going to Madison Square Garden. It's going to be a regional. It's going to be one of the regions this year, one of the opening two rounds.
And then wrestling there in, 2016, they're hosting the national championship?
2016. And fans will absolutely love. The Garden is, you really feel, there are certain venues that you're in where you look around and go, wow, Rose Bowl, Lambeau Field, Fenway Park, Madison Square Garden, Augusta National. I mean, there are just certain places, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that embody a history that's just different than anything else. I mean, you go into Madison Square Garden, I remember one of the things, you walk down all the pictures on the walls in the lower, and this is something the fans can't see. I mean, this is outside the locker rooms, and it's in the inner core that allows you to go from one side of the court to the other by going around. And I remember one of the players, who's that guy hitting Muhammad Ali? Joe Frazier. Who's that guy? Who's the guy singing? Frank Sinatra. So you're not, trying to bridge some generations here for them. Keys tomorrow night against a revived and revamped. The Wisconsin team they're facing, they have to assume they're different. That it's a fresh start and to just forget the label. I mean, so what are the keys tomorrow night against them? I mean, to me, one of them is to get up early and suffocate them.
Yeah, I think that is big. Try to get the momentum right on your side and ride what you did the other night. Obviously, passing and serving is critical. Penn State's passing was fantastic, as you mentioned, against Washington. Wisconsin's a decent serving team, not great, but they served pretty well last night against Texas. And if Penn State serves well, you have to put pressure on Wisconsin defensively. It's hard to do because they're very good in the back row. And then up front, just use your size to your advantage. Take it to those Wisconsin blockers, block their attackers, and try to get Lauren Carlini uncomfortable. Wisconsin's pretty good out of system. What Wisconsin will do is try to make it an ugly match, like they did last night. It was ugly. It wasn't the best volleyball that you will see, but that benefits them. If Penn State can really get it, well, there's a good flow. They should win it. I think they're feeling pretty good about the matchup.
That's Brian Tripp from Seattle. Tomorrow night, Penn State takes on Wisconsin for the national championship in women's volleyball, which ironically is also opposite Penn State Iowa wrestling. It's pretty close to one another. Oh. We'll come back. Get Kevin's comments, big volleyball fan, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Holiday time means Brewers Outlet time. Get a Bud 24-pack of big 16-ounce cans, just $16.98 a case. That's more beer than a 30-pack. Labatt 28-pack bottles, $19.95. Sam Adams, $29.95. Seagram's Coolers, only $21.98. Have a friend? Need a present? The Beverage Supermarket offers the number one gift idea, a Brewers Outlet gift card. One-stop shopping. Beer, soda, snacks, hot sauce, fresh roasted peanuts, pickles, and don't forget the Bud 16-ounce case, $16.98. Merry Christmas from Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout.
Like a 2005 Chevrolet Colorado, inspected with all stickers, just $12,494. A Carfax certified 2012 Ford Focus SE with low miles, just $13,962. HHR LT, new set of tires, $15,498. 2011 Toyota RAV4 Limited, $19,492. Diesel power for your big jobs, a 2011 Ford Super Duty F-350 with only 10,000 miles. Lowest price promise, $34,595. Call 570-286-7746.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout.
See the full inventory and schedule a test drive and see what your trade is worth, too, at sunburymotors.com.
At the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Safe Hunting PA in a minute. Brought to you by Ram.
It's time to fight fire with steel. To advance truck technology with an available Pentastar V6 and 8-speed transmission. The 2013 Ram 1500 with best-in-class fuel economy. Engineered to move heaven and earth. Guts. Glory. Ram. Standard pickup class excludes hybrids. EPA estimated 17 city, 20 combined, 25 highway MPG based on V6 4x2. Ram is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group LLC.
Well, coming up in the next half hour, we're going to talk to Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, get you a read on the Steelers, a little bit on the Pirates as well, and Pitt, by the way, playing its bowl game next week. They'll play Bowling Green in the Little Caesars Bowl in Detroit, and we'll get an update on all three with Tony DeFazio in the next half hour. Thanks to Brian Tripp for joining us from Seattle.
Are you going to give us your picks for the weekend bowl games? I have mine. The New Mexico Bowl, the Las Vegas Bowl, the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, not to be confused with the infamous Idaho Potato Bowl, the New Orleans Bowl as well.
Colorado State.
I have Fresno, Washington State.
Fresno State over USC.
I'm with you on that one.
Even though USC has much more talent, Fresno State has more desire, and they're on their same coach instead of their third.
Winner. That's exactly my thought.
Tulane in the New Orleans Bowl, yep. and the famous Idaho Potato Bowl, San Diego State.
All right. You and I, the only ones we disagree on is the New Mexico Bowl. I'm going to go with fight for Washington State.
Mike Leach, huh?
Why not?
I was on Mike's show once when he was doing radio in between jobs.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Fight, fight, fight for Washington State. Win the victory. Win the day for Crimson and Gray.
Of course, the Washington State flag is always at every college game day. Have you noticed that?
No, I didn't notice that.
Oh, my goodness. It's cult-like.
I did not notice that. Now every I'm going to have to look for it.
Every single game day, it's there. Every one of them, without exception, for years. For years.
Every time I hear Washington State or see them, all I can think of is John Candy in the movie Volunteers from 1985 singing Fight, Fight, Fight for Washington State.
Well, today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. Stock up. It's really, if you're going to stock up, do it ASAP. You may want to bring something over to somebody's house. You may be having people over your house. There could be unexpected guests. Or maybe just for yourself. Snacks, fresh hot roasted peanuts, pickle bar, and yes, a wide array of beverages, and yes, a wide array of great beers. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And we were talking earlier about some of the tweets of people taking fantasy football over the top, threatening handles on Twitter for Calvin Johnson, Matthew Stafford, Brandon Jacobs. It's a real shame. Well, let's turn our attention now. Kevin gets bitter about the Steelers, but not to that level. We bring in Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Hi, Tony. It's great to have you with us.
Happy to be here. Whatever happened to Boo and You Stink? Whatever happened to those what seem like charming phrases now?
I mean, that's not what fantasy football the 95%+ are all like, you know, they're in it for fun and the whole thing. There's that 5% that's scary.
It is scary, no question.
All right, so let's get to it. The Steelers. First question, Tony. Down the stretch, they play better, so there's no question about that. About a month ago, everyone's talking about wholesale changes and what needs to be done. Are we seeing a better product or fool's gold?
You know, I think it's maybe a little bit of both. I mean, they clearly played better. There's no question about that. Now, the bar wasn't set very high in September. Let's keep that in mind. They were, you know, really, and Ben Roethlisberger recently said this, they were one of the worst teams in the league the first four games of the season. They still have the same problem, Steve. They've just learned how to win in spite of those problems. They can't run the ball. The offensive line is what it is. The defensive secondary is old and slow. The linebackers have been, you know, have probably underperformed.
Mm-hmm.
And they've just learned to win in spite of that. Now, I think the one area where the product has improved, and this makes for some interesting conversation in the offseason, the offense has gotten under Todd Haley. And it's interesting now, the last couple of games, the person you hear defending the offense and speaking the praises of Todd Haley's offense is none other than Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
So what they thought was bad is starting to show some promise. I think that's where the most promise has been on the offensive side of the ball and how they are playing and how they are executing Todd Haley's offense.
There's certain parts of Todd Haley's offense that are part of his DNA as to where he wants to put the ball. Has he made a couple of adaptations, though, in your opinion, to fit what Ben Roethlisberger also does well?
I think, yes, I think he has. You know, I mean, you can't... I think it just took some time because they were coming from very opposite spectrums. You know, I mean, there was the school of thought that said, Ben, get rid of the ball right away, don't freelance. And then there was the school of thought that said, Ben Roethlisberger owns two rings, because he can freelance and because he freelances.
Right.
And I think there has been kind of a happy medium there, and I think Ben Roethlisberger has found a happy medium there as well. You know, I think a lot of it was trying to teach an old dog new tricks, and let's face it, it's understandable for Ben to be a little to fight that a little bit. I don't even think it was a conscious, you know, I don't want to cooperate with you type of a thing, just as you know, as much as it was Ben's DNA. It was in Ben's DNA to do those things, and I think Ben has realized, you know, his age, and he's an old 31 years old right now because of the wear and tear he's taken. So I do think that Ben has moved a little bit as well as Todd Haley has.
And then there's the Le'Veon Bell story. We've talked about this repeatedly, but it looks like he has settled himself in at that running back spot, and between he and Eddie Lacy at Green Bay, these are the top two young running backs in the NFL.
I think that's probably an accurate statement. And, you know, if you look at the stats, you're going to see two very different stories. But in a couple of years from now, maybe even as soon as a year from now, I think you're going to look back at Bell's rookie year and really see how much he learned. I think he gained a lot of respect from his teammates. They know the line that he's running behind is unbelievably banged up, and the guys that are in there aren't very good, frankly, a lot of them. You know, they're down to a third-string center who, you know, got cut by Jacksonville at one point. So, you know, it is what it is, and Bell has never said a peep. He's done nothing but put his head down and run hard, and I think he's impressed a lot of people. He's got talent, and I think they're very, very high on Bell. Probably of all the rookies that have played this year, and you know, a significant amount of them have, I think Bell is clearly the A-number-one guy.
The Garvin play is not a dirty play. It's not an intentional play, but he got the $25,000 fine in part because Hubert, and if you really watch the play, Hubert actually is tracking Antonio Brown. He's tracking him. Now, he's not going to, you know, whether he can make the tackle or not, we can debate that, Tony, but he actually is tracking him on the play. That's why he didn't see Garvin.
Yeah, I mean, it seems odd that, you know, those guys are allowed to make a tackle, but you're not allowed to block them, I guess.
Right.
But,
I mean,
it's just become so interesting, Steve. I mean, the players now are just so used to these fines being levied, whether they see them coming or not. You know, I think 2-3 years ago, you'd have heard nonstop complaining in the locker room, and now it's met with a shrug of the shoulders. You know, the game is definitely changing. You know, and Garvin's a guy who really is a great story. He was not even a free agent signee. He was invited to a tryout camp.
Yeah.
For the Steelers rookie camp, and then got an invitation back to St. Vincent to actual training camp. So he really is a great story, and I think a lot of the guys feel for him. $25,000 hits Garvin a lot harder than it hits a lot of other guys who are getting fines.
Yeah, no question. And he fell down on the play, and he got up was just trying to make a play and help. I mean, he was just trying to hustle his way back into the play. I mean, so that's what he was trying to do. The fine is understandable because he got him underneath with the crown of the helmet, underneath the face mask. but it was only because he was trying to make a pure hustle play.
And that's why he's in the NFL. You know, if he doesn't play like that, he's working for a living the same way you and I are.
Oh no. Oh no. That really puts it in perspective, Tony. Defensively, this has not been a game-changing defense defensively for 2 years now at minimum. It seems like they made a few more plays. Do you think that's going to end up being the heavy concentration in the draft, that they start looking at what to do with this defense to find more playmakers?
I think it has to be for a number of reasons, and you know, one of them is just simply age. You know, Troy Polamalu has stayed healthy this whole season, which a lot of people, you know, which frankly I'm surprised by. I didn't think he'd be able to play a 16-game season. I probably shouldn't say that yet. I know he's still got eight quarters of football in front of him to get there, but you know, he's been healthy, but you know, he's 32 years old. Ike Taylor's 33 years old. Brett Kiesel and Lamar Woodley are both not going to finish the season. You know, these are guys who were stalwarts of the team just a couple of years ago. I need to throw Ryan Clark in there as well. A lot of these guys are taking up a lot of money, and a lot of them are near the end of their contracts. And in addition to that, the replacement for these guys is not necessarily on the roster right now. And I think that's probably the biggest issue. So, yeah, I think they are going to have to concentrate pretty heavily on the defensive side of the ball. Some interesting decisions they'll have to make at wide receiver. Do they add there? Do they try to keep a guy like an Emmanuel Sanders? What do they do with Jericho Cotchery? But I think as far as the draft goes, I really think they're going to have to concentrate on probably the back end of that defense.
Flip to the Pirates for a moment. They have been incredibly quiet, and here it is mid-December. Is there some concern that, you know, I know they've built a really nice farm system, but is there some concern that they've been ultra-quiet to this stage?
Yeah, I mean, the fan base is upset. A lot of the fan base is upset. I shouldn't say the entire fan base, but a lot of the fan base is upset. I think there's some, you know, a lot of fingers being pointed at the ownership saying, you know, they're letting the fans down again. I do think they got caught at first base. I think they were hoping to get James Loney, and that didn't work out. I don't know whether it was a reluctance on the Pirates' part to go 3 years or not. Neil Huntington talked about how the Pirates prefer to go 2 years with guys, and let's face it, you're not going to sign a lot of guys in the prime of their careers, certainly, for a two-year contract. You're going to find a lot of older guys looking to, looking to extend their careers when you're just looking to sign a guy to a two-year deal. So, yeah, you know, I think there definitely is concern. I think the dragging of the feet by A.J. Burnett has been a problem for the team. He hasn't made up his mind yet, and from the folks I talk to who cover the team on a daily basis, he genuinely hasn't made up his mind yet. And I think that has hurt the Pirates a little bit. I think they're reluctant to dish out a good contract to somebody else if they're going to be able to get A.J. Burnett aboard. So I think that's hurt a little bit. At the same time, I think Neil Huntington is quite comfortable waiting. And if he has to pull the trigger on a trade for, say, an Ike Davis or something like that to fill that first base hole, I think he's comfortable doing that, whether it's December or even into March. I think he's comfortable making decisions late and even letting this thing go into spring training. But I do think they've got a major situation at first base that they have to address before the season starts. Right field is another hole, but I think they're going to be okay filling that internally until their prospect Gregory Polanco is ready. They don't have any prospects at first base.
Very quickly, Pitt's going to be playing in Detroit in the Little Caesars Bowl, so at least they got out of Birmingham. That's the plus. I want to ask you, you've had a chance to watch Aaron Donald, and I have not personally given him enough of his just due. How good of a football player is this guy?
Well, that describes him right there. He's a football player. You know, he's the quintessential football player. He is so fast off the whistle, Steve, that a lot of his plays, you're not seeing him get blocked because he is just so fast off the whistle and so fast off the block that there's not a lot of contact being made. He's ridiculously strong. Probably his best game, Steve, was the Notre Dame game, where if you look at the stats, you're going to see one assisted tackle. But he tied up two and three guys that entire game long, and every defensive play that Pitt made, just about every play that was a positive for the Panthers in that game was, you know, you track it back, it was due to Aaron Donald tying up one, two, three guys and letting somebody else, whether it was a linebacker or whomever, run free and make a play. the big question is going to be, what can he do at the next level? He's 6 foot 285. He doesn't have much of a frame to add a whole lot more weight. I think his play is going to certainly give him a chance, and I expect him to have a great game in Detroit. I think he'll be very impressive at the Senior Bowl practices, assuming that's where he goes. And I think that he'll probably put up good combine numbers as well. But his size is what it is, and it's not going to change much. So I don't know exactly where he'll fit in on Sundays.
Yeah, they have Bowling Green, and I think that's a pick'em game, except I think he's the difference maker in the game, because I don't think Bowling Green can control him. And I think that's a big part of it. I don't think Bowling Green can run the football because of him.
Well, that's going to be, that I think will be the difference. I mean, Paul Chris talked yesterday about how, people asked if they were going to be overlooking Bowling Green, and he chuckled and said, "We're 6-6. I don't know who we're going to be overlooking." And you hope that's the case. When you look at a guy like Donald, and a lot of guys who have been on those award tours tend to lose focus a little bit. They don't join the team until a little bit later. I don't see that being the case with Donald. He's a guy who the success he's achieved has been because of his focus. And so I tend to agree with you.
Happy holidays to you and yours, Tony. Merry Christmas. Enjoy. We'll talk to you next week.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to everybody at the station as well. Thanks, Steve.
Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Kevin's analysis upcoming momentarily. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The Beverage Supermarket on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Was it Jeff asked the question about Allen Robinson today on Facebook?
I think it was Justin.
Justin also wanted to remind me that I said that Wisconsin had no shot against Texas. And Justin is absolutely right to call me out on that, because I said that would be nothing. It would be over in less than an hour. Well, it turned out that Wisconsin beat them in four, and I was dead wrong.
How long did it take, though? Maybe you had the time right.
No, it took longer than that, because Penn State was supposed to be on at 9:30 last night. And I flipped the match on at like 9:45, and I thought, okay, let's see how far we are into the first set here. And it hadn't started yet, and I thought, So what the heck happened in the first one?
You're like, uh-oh.
And I looked at them, no, not uh-oh. I'd be, do I really care who won? not really.
What does it say for the Big Ten, though? What does it say for the Big Ten, though, with two teams in the finals, not only in the finals, but in the Final Four yet?
Yeah, well, the Big Ten's been the best conference in women's volleyball for a long time because of the depth. The top two conferences in women's volleyball are the Big Ten and the Pac-12. If you notice, the SEC is not, they don't have a lot of other.
They're not good at many other things but football.
Well, no, there's no wrestling conference in the SEC. There's no interest at all in having it either. This isn't. I mean, you notice Missouri is in the Mid-American Conference for wrestling when they left the Big 12. There's no wrestling in the SEC. Zip, zilch, nada. Texas has 14 sports. You realize that?
Let's see. There's football. There's football. And I think they have another version of football in Texas.
And they have men's basketball. And again, we've talked about this before, so I don't want to be a broken record about it, but they're the only two sports that make money. And you need to, and people, oh, the money, the money, money. You can't have the other sports without the money. You just can't do it. You can't have the other sports unless you have somebody out there making money, because you cannot run a loss. No business can run at a loss.
Well, that's like the other day we were talking about the sports that were being dropped. Was it Temple? Was it Temple that dropped both softball and baseball?
Yeah, Temple dropped seven sports.
I mean, those are two sports you wouldn't think would get dropped.
Well, Wisconsin doesn't have baseball. You realize that? Wisconsin is the only Big Ten school that doesn't have baseball. And even with the expansion of the baseball tournament in the Big Ten, because they have the tournament every year at Huntington Park and Columbus and so forth, and yeah, it's not wildly popular. I'll be frank with you. It's not really that well attended. but they have had no inclination to bring it back, and Wisconsin's made money. Wisconsin's made money in men's ice hockey. They've made money in men's basketball. They made money in football, but they have had no desire to, because the numbers don't allow them to do that. There's a, you know, because the number of participants you need for baseball, you know, it, to them, it keeps them out of the Title IX ball game. And that's part of it. Part of what they did was it was a Title IX move to make sure that the numbers worked. Rutgers and Maryland will come into the Big Ten next year. Now, they won't play baseball this year. They'll start playing baseball in 2015, but they'll be part of the mix in the Big Ten. But there's just a bottom line. And the reason I talk about the money component, which I know makes you uncomfortable, but you have to explain sometimes why things are done and why it works a certain way. And without the explanation, it doesn't give you perspective. Okay? Does Penn State, are there weekends where wrestling has outdrawn Penn State basketball? Absolutely. All right, but wrestling still loses money at Penn State. Men's basketball makes money. In fact, men's basketball makes enough money to support itself, women's basketball, and the wrestling program. Now, why is that? Well, it's the television contract, the radio contract, and higher ticket prices.
Hey, real quick, Steve, tonight on WKOK, Shikellamy taking on Midwest, trying to make it 2 in a row after the overtime win at Mifflinburg on Wednesday night. Airtime set for 7:06 in Middleburg.
And also Santa tonight from 6 to 7 tonight. Santa Claus, an 80-year tradition here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, we wish you a great and happy weekend. Be safe. Kevin and I will talk to you on Monday.